Dempsey steals it. Robinson wants it again. Stanley Robinson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Stanley Robinson Show.
Welcome to the Adirondack Podcast. I'm Tyler, joined tonight by Megan Bard.
Hello.
And Kevin Meacham.
How's it going?
Fine. And Russ Steinberg.
Hello.
Thank you. And for the first time, tonight's podcast is brought to you by Home Field Apparel, which I am beyond excited about. So Home Field, if you haven't been paying attention, has launched a line of vintage UConn apparel, which is absolutely gorgeous, and some of which I will be buried in. Oh, I forgot. If you use the code ADIMEBACK, you get 20% off your first order. Pretty good. Yeah. Russ, you actually have some shirts. They sent you some in advance. Do you want to give a review?
I have two shirts. Yeah, they're great.
I hear they're exceptionally soft.
They're exceptionally soft. They do run a little bit small.
Okay.
So order, you know, if you're like kind of in between, maybe order the slightly larger size.
Yeah, that seemed to be the consensus.
Yeah, but they're fantastic. And I would show them off now, but this is a podcast and you can't see. And also they're in the laundry.
Fair enough. Yeah, the so obviously Big Sad Jonathan on a baseball shirt, which looks great, is the...
I have that one. It's great.
So that is clearly the one setting the non-UConn internet ablaze. But I got to say, the one our friend Penfield kind of dug up out of the archives with the leaning Husky swagging against the block C there. That's my fave.
So Homefield sent me two shirts. They sent me the baseball tee, and they sent me the one like with the blue around the logo. Mm-hmm. And then I still spent $70 with the Dimeback discount today, getting the hoodie and getting another shirt. They could take all of my money, and I hope they take all of yours.
They will. pick some up. Go to homefieldapparel.com, or you can actually go to dimeback.com/homefield, and it'll redirect you. So with that out of the way, obviously we have some very sad news this week. Former UConn player Stanley Robinson was found dead in his home in Birmingham, Alabama. He was only 32 years old. Before we get to our thoughts, I just want to play a few clips. This first one is from Stanley's niece, Amaya.
My name's Amaya. I'm Stanley's niece. What do I say? Good things about my uncle. There's always good things to say to him. There are only good things to say about him. And I'm sure, like, I'm very positive there's nothing that I can't, you know, say that everyone already knows is, you know, his presence and his whole character with just smiles and joy. And, you know, no matter what, I just want everyone to know that he loved them dearly. He was always family oriented and, you know, he had love for everyone, and that's all he wanted, was everyone to be together and just to form relationships. And, you know, knowing my Uncle Manny, you know, I'm sure he thought, even just as his friend, you know, they were family to him, and he cared. He truly, really deeply cared. And I guess that's all. Like, I see all the love and support, and my family, we're really appreciative, and we love everyone, and we just wish everyone else the best as well, you know, after hearing about his passing.
I also wanted to read this. So Josh Ingram, who's the SID at St. Joseph's, was kind enough to pass along this quote from Coach Jim Calhoun. He said, quote, "Today's a sad day. I've lost one of my guys. Stanley was not only an exceptional player for me, but one of the most genuine guys to be around. He was a tremendous, tremendous athlete. But what I loved about him the most was his personality and childlike smile. He left us far too early, but he will never be forgotten." I also wanted to play this clip. This is via Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe. He was able to ask Celtics guard Kemba Walker about Stanley.
Kemba, lost a teammate, former teammate, yesterday.
how you kind of how you digesting that, and how tough is it to be here and not be able to, and maybe be limited in how you can reach out, and what's been your reaction?
It's tough. I mean, it was really, really shocking, you know, to hear that news. You know, I played with Stanley for two seasons, and he was just a happy guy, man. Like, always smiling, always in a good mood. He was just fun to play with. He was an upperclassman, so you know, he was a guy who I watched before I got there. So it was fun to play, man, throwing lobs and stuff like that. It's just a really sad moment for. I really feel bad for his family, you know, his kids. You know, he's a Husky forever. May he rest in peace.
And then finally, before we get to our thoughts, here's some remarks from I think the player I most closely associate with Stanley's career at UConn, Jerome Dyson.
Hey, this is Jerome Dyson. I want to say rest in peace to my guy, Stanley Robinson. Sticks, you're always going to remember, man. He's a great guy, great father, great teammate. You're one of the very eight that made it out with us at UConn over the great 4 years that we had there. He didn't even on after that. Get to know you after that. Relationships off the court. Just a great guy. It's just very sad to see you go soon.
Meech, you wrote a really nice piece for the site. What was your initial reaction? How did you first sort of absorb the news when you heard it?
I mean, I was just completely shocked because you would never expect someone who graduated college in 2010 or left college in 2010 to be gone in 2020. And like, it really hit me hard, harder than I probably was expecting. Cause I'm a year older than Stanley Robinson and that class. And, you know, that's a special group of athletes that I, you know, in my life that, cause you know, obviously as I said in the piece, I graduated in 2009. I was there for 3 years with that class. And they, you know, watching those guys go from freshmen, you know, out of their depth to being, you know, a magnificent team in 2009 and a Final Four team, was really one of the most special things that I've ever, as a sports fan, had the privilege of watching and to just, you know, I was thinking about it because I had tweeted something about the half court alley-oop from Dyson like a day earlier. Like I've thought about Stanley Robinson like every couple of weeks for the last 10 years just because of how insane his, you know, his career at UConn was. I was honestly distraught when I heard the news. It was just like, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. That he's gone.
Megan, what is your sort of lingering memory? How will you remember Sticks?
You know, I feel like he brought so much like childlike joy to the way he played basketball. Just this like effervescent like glee is like how his game translated. And it's a lot of fun to watch somebody who's having that much fun. And like, you know, the whole thing about him going to play to, you know, when he got kicked off the team, going to the scrapyard and like working in a scrapyard in Willimantic is some of the like most, you know, miserable work you can really imagine, like difficult, hard work. And that he, you know, he made that choice to go do that, to work his way back onto the team is, I think, just says so much about like the kind of person that he was.
You know, it's always sad when these things sort of start manifesting themselves after somebody passes away, but it was very sort of interesting to me and heartening that same sort of description you gave of him just being very joyful and a positive force and just universally beloved. Like, that was my experience watching him as a player. And I wasn't really aware that it was universal. Like, every single person who ever crossed his path had the same level of affection for him and had the same essentially experience with him of him just being a joyful, happy guy to be around. I don't know, that at least made me feel good.
When you follow a program, like, you know, like we all have on this podcast for 20 plus years, the seasons and the teams can kind of blend together, and it's kind of hard sometimes to differentiate, you know, who played with who, what year they went to this round, whatever. But you kind of have those identifying factors in each era. And Stanley was always the player I associated the 2007 to 2009 teams with the most. And even though he wasn't the best player really on any of those teams, he was kind of the face of them for me. And I think Tyler and Megan, you both said it best, that the reason why he was so much fun to watch was because he was having so much fun playing. And it's not something we really talked about, as you said, but just a week ago, out of pure coincidence, I mean, two days before he died, Meacham and I stayed up until about 1:30 in the morning watching games from 2009, and we watched two excellent Stanley Robinson games, the first one being that game at Marquette.
Game was fun as hell.
Megan, you watched that one.
Yeah,
with us.
I didn't say for the second for the second half of the
we were the double on feature. Yeah, but that game had like five amazing Stanley Robinson dunks, and on all of them we went back and like watched them two or three times, and on all of them you could hear coming through the broadcast his scream that like you began to identify his dunks with afterwards, and it was just so much fun to watch, and it made me miss those UConn teams, and just to hear the news about Stanley 2 days after that, it was tougher. It was tougher for me than I would have thought. I am glad that that he's left us with so much to rewatch and reminisce on and talk about.
Yeah, I'm gonna burn out the tape on the 12-minute. Dunk compilation TCF made.
Oh my God. Go and watch that if you haven't. And if you have, go and watch it again.
Yeah, you can
I watched it like 50 times in the last few days.
You can watch it as many times as you want. It does not get old.
It's also like, even obviously before his passing, to me, like Stanley is one of the people that was so unique that he is the standard bearer for like certain parts of UConn. So like Andre Jackson, for instance, is coming in as a recruit, and you watch him flying through the air in a dunk in his high school mixtape, and the very first thing you say is, wow, he looks as athletic as Stanley Robinson. Like,
yeah,
that's the benchmark.
Like, whenever UConn's brought in a recruit with like above average athletic ability, like my dad has asked me, who, you know, you've watched him, what does he look like? You're like, a poor man Stanley Robinson. Right. And that's just like my default answer.
Right.
Like that's just who he is.
And honestly, like it might be the most unique and most noteworthy like characteristic. Like I'm trying to think of other ways. Like if somebody was a great shooter, you probably wouldn't even say they're a poor man's Ray Allen.
Right.
If they're a great, like, no one is really at, like, a level of shot blocking. They would say he's a poor man's Hashim Thabeet. Like, Stanley is so unique that he has, like, his own category.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, was there anyone who would even really compare to him that came before Stanley at UConn?
Rudy Gay's probably the closest.
Rudy. Right. I mean, that was, like, the beginning, though. Like, Rudy and Stanley, like, the beginning of that era of like freak athletes.
Yeah,
there were a lot of them on that 07 08 09 run.
You know, that alley-oop in that Texas game is probably the first Stanley moment that pops into my head every time I hear his name. Is there a different one that you guys have?
Meach, you and Peter both mentioned the dunk over Big Baby, which I think was hilarious. Independently.
It's one of the first ones in that 12-minute clip, and it is, like, in terms of funny sports plays, like, it's not a funny sports plays that are not a blooper, like, that is the funniest sports play I think I've ever seen. because Stanley, he does what he does. He just dunks on the guy, and it's Big Baby, and he lands on him, and he's, like, yelling at Big Baby, and Big Baby just turns away. He's like, what? Who is this guy? What are you doing? And UConn's down 20, like, at the time, because they were bad that year, and it doesn't matter. Stanley's having fun, and he's showing off, and he's having a good time. Like, that's just what a beautiful moment that is.
I also enjoyed, TCF again tweeted a great highlight of Stanley. I forget which game it was. Oh, it was a Syracuse game, right? And so there's a putback, and Stanley literally jumps like onto Jeff Adrian's back to do the putback jam. And you just, like, the camera cuts to the baseline shot, and Jeff Adrian is sitting there just shaking his head like, this fucking guy just, like Stanley just did an insane putback dunk, and you could see Jeff Adrian being like, can this dude just stop jumping on me?
Always.
No, I think one of the things that, and Megan, you touched on it a little bit, but we haven't really talked about it. One thing that was so endearing about Stanley was that when he was kicked off the team for that semester, it was because he had some growing to do. He was immature, but his immaturity was the same kind of stuff that, like, every college kid has to go through in some sort of way. Like Calhoun said it himself, he didn't break the law. He didn't really get in trouble. It was stuff like being late for class or, you know, missing practice or stuff that we've all done. And he was very identifiable in that way. And to see him really be brought back down to earth in a harsh way, but to kind of embrace it and come back and really not miss a beat was just such a great story, especially for somebody who was around his age and, you know, to see someone go through that.
Yeah, as like a generally nice and person who often screws up, like, how do you not relate to Stanley Robinson?
Right.
Like, he's you, but also he can jump 10 feet.
I was going to say, as somebody who frequently catches half-court lobs and dunks them, I am a lot like Stanley Robinson.
I love that story that somebody told about how Calhoun laid into him about something and, like, didn't really know how to respond to it. He just hugged him.
Yeah.
Like, how do you get mad at that?
Well, my thing is, like, how many dudes, like, Calhoun has lost it on a lot of guys. And, like, the fact that he's the only guy who's ever responded with, like, I'm just going to hug him.
You know what I thought of when I saw that story was that famous picture of Calhoun blowing up at Hilton Armstrong.
Me too.
And just imagining if Hilton had given him a hug after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were some great stories floating around. I loved Mike Anthony from The Current shared a story about how when he was covering the team and Stanley made a point to just come and sit next to him and be like, hey, Mike, how's everything at the paper? I obviously wasn't covering the team in 09. The first time I met Stanley was just very briefly at the Calhoun charity game. And it was one of the most affirming experiences. Cause again, like that memory you have of like him just being a very happy, joyful player and then getting to meet him in person and realizing, oh, that's just him. Like that was really special. And the outpouring of support that we've seen from like former teammates and other, you know, alumni, like it was evident in person too. Like you could not be around him and just not smile. Like every single player that walked out of the locker room for that event was just happy to see Stanley.
Yeah. I think this one definitely like hit everybody a lot. And you know, I don't know if it's just like, you know, the times we're in, everything's trash all the time, but like this one definitely I think hit everybody. You know, you just sort of saw it on social media, even just among the fans, like people who've never met him. You know, there was one, like I read some story about some dude who's like, I used to manage a restaurant in Manchester, and like Stanley would come in and I used to talk to him about like the games, and he like mentioned he wanted to get his dad tickets for like his 50th birthday or something, and like day of, Stanley rolls up and just like drops off his family seats so this guy can take his dad to the game. And he's like, we sat right next to Kemba's mom. And I was like, fuck, you know, like a guy like that dude, like we had to lose that dude. Like, yeah. It's just,
yeah,
it hurts. It hurts more than other things have hurt.
Yeah. And from all accounts, you know, he was in the middle of very positive transitions. He obviously had three kids, so our condolences to them as well. But Jim Calhoun had a really heart-wrenching quote, I think, in Dom Amore's piece in The Current.
Jeff Jacobs' article was like, that fucked me up.
Yeah.
Jake. That fucked me up.
Calhoun even said something like Stanley, he had helped Stanley arrange a job in Connecticut, and Calhoun was going to have to call the employer and tell him Stanley wasn't coming. Like, yeah, that got me. The Jeff Jacobs article in Hearst was really good too. You should read both of them if you get a chance. And we should say, hopefully by the time this pod comes, we'll know a little bit more, but you know, if there's an opportunity to help, especially Stanley's children and also his family with, you know, funeral expenses, if there's a GoFundMe or anything, obviously we'll post it with this podcast. So look out for that. Let's get back to, let's do fun Stanley. I mean, does anyone else have?
There's plenty of fun Stanley.
Yeah, let's do memory lane. What else you got?
I just in terms of like the great dunks that Stanley had, there's one. I think Stanley has the greatest putback dunk I've ever seen, which is at Providence, where he comes from off the screen, and it's in the dunk compilation. You'll see it. But he comes from off the screen and like full windmills, like from 8 feet away. And it's just the most ferocious, like gorgeous thing I've ever seen. And I just like get chills thinking about it.
Meech is windmilling on the Zoom call, by the way. Just FYI. I think one of the like most, I feel like people forget Stanley had that one year where he shot like lights out from three.
Oh, yeah.
Was that 08?
I forget about that. Yeah.
08, he shot like 40-something% from three out of nowhere.
Yeah.
He never did it again.
His senior year, he was decent shooting the three. His junior year after he came back from the scrapyard, he only shot 23 pointers and made, I think, three of them.
Not bad.
But yeah, I mean, like that was kind of the thing about Stanley. That he, like, his development as a player, you know, he never quite took that next step to become kind of the, you know, NBA player we all thought he'd be. His jump shot was always inconsistent, you know, that stretch at the end of 07-08 aside. But he just did so many things, and he had such good instincts rebounding the ball. Obviously a great shot blocker. I think one of my favorite highlights of his is in the Chattanooga game when he just obliterates some guy, some like 6'4" guy.
You're gonna have to be more specific.
Like where his head almost hits the rim and he is like above the ball when he's blocking it. Like it's just one of the most absurd. It'd be what would happen if like I was playing Stanley Robinson. but that
who are you in this scenario?
but it was a Division I athlete. Like he just had absurd gifts.
Meech, let's talk about how that 2019 would have won the national championship if not for Jerome Dyson dying.
It's true.
That's right, Megan.
The other thing that's true is that were it not for Stanley Robinson coming through the way he did after Dyson went down, they do not make that Final Four. Like they don't come anywhere close to it. And to think about like how that year went, like he didn't even play in the fall. He wasn't even on campus in the fall. He was not associated with the team. He was not enrolled like at all. And then to come in the middle of the season and then shit hits the fan. And like he really had to step up and mature very quickly. And he did. Like he did those things and they made it to that Final Four. We don't need to, you know, finish that whole situation. But the important thing was they did make it. Yeah.
And not for nothing, in that game they lost, the Michigan State game, which was mm-hmm. an away game, he True. Was by far their best player in that game.
Oh, yeah.
Like in their biggest game of the season, he stepped up. He was their best player.
I mean, he's arguably the best player during that tournament run.
Yeah.
Kim English, who played for the Missouri team that UConn beat in the Elite Eight, tweeted after Stanley passed that he remembers preparing for the game against UConn in the Elite Eight and how the emphasis was on, obviously, Hashim Thabeet and what he can do, you know, stuffing your shit back in your face. And he said they all prepared for that and they all tried to work around that. And then Stanley showed up and did the exact same thing to them.
Yeah, I'll say Stanley's one of like a handful of guys who really, I think, at least in the moment, got hampered by like unrealistic expectations based on like recruiting. Like everyone, yeah, especially because he followed Rudy, everyone expected him to be Rudy. And yeah, obviously, in hindsight, they were such fundamentally different players. But when you look at that 09 team, like, I'm not sure there's a better example of a guy than Stanley on that team who just fit into the middle of that roster and did everything the team needed to be done. Mm-hmm. Like, if you take Stanley off that team, they probably lose, like, what, five more games? Like, he was just such an integral part on both ends of the court.
Yeah.
That, I don't know, it's hard to find, like, obviously he wasn't a star at the level of, like, Kemba in 11. And when he and Dyson had a chance to sort of lead the team in 2010, it didn't go very well. But when he was surrounded by guys who could do other things and he could just kind of play the brand of basketball he was best at, which was a high energy, like high intensity, getting into space and using his athleticism, he was so amazingly valuable to that team in a way that I can't even like come up with another example.
He was a force multiplier.
That's a great phrase. Yeah.
You know, he didn't do anything the best, but you needed, as I said in the piece, you needed to keep a body on him because he can rebound, he can block shots, he's going to try for the putbacks, mm-hmm, get offensive rebounds. He can shoot the three if you leave him open, so you got to guard him. He has, you know, somewhat of a handle. So he just does all these things that give the offense and the defense different dimensions. And that was what made that team so good. Because, you know, if you wanted to try and press UConn like Louisville did, you know, we could take Stanley out and we could bring in Kemba. But if you wanted to go four guards like Villanova would, we can put Stanley in. He'll guard your biggest guard, and then you have no answer for him on the other end.
Yeah, that's probably Stanley's, like, secret, too, right? Like, his secret to – like, he could really guard all five positions if he had to. Like – you could mismatch your point guard on him and it would be a tough guard, but like you're not getting to the rim and you're probably not getting an open three. And then if you leave your, like, he could defend, especially those like Nova teams at the time, like he's defending your center. Like, it's hard to, like, I don't want to say role player because he was so much better than what we typically associate with the role player, but he really did he filled every single need in that lineup between like AJ Price, who was probably the, you know, I assume he was the leading scorer on the team. I'm not sure. And then Thabeet, who was probably, you know, the most dominating interior force and one of the more dominant interior players in UConn history, especially on defense. And like, he filled every gap in that roster between the two.
Yeah. You know, the 09 team, and Meech and I talked about this a little bit while we were rewatching those games, was like the ideal team in terms of how it was put together, where every player filled the exact role that he needed to. And when you took Jerome Dyson out of the equation, when Dyson went down, UConn still stayed pretty dominant. And it's because Stanley Robinson was able to step in and fill whatever need was necessary. And you would think when you have a team that is very defined in terms of positions and in terms of roles, losing one guy could really hurt you. And that wasn't the case because of Stanley Robinson.
Yeah. And as I kind of hinted at, like, one of the reasons that 09 team is so special is because we saw these guys all come up together. I mean, that 06, 07 team had that giant recruiting class with, I think, eight guys plus Jeff Adrian and Austrie and Price coming back. And you saw them like literally work through their shit for 2.5 years. And, you know, you would see flashes, you know, Stanley would have 20-10 game as a freshman, and then he'd go silent for the next month. And then slowly you would start to see them get more consistent and more consistent. And then by the time, you know, that class was juniors and you had senior Adrian and senior Price, yeah, it was a fully formed team. And it just, you know, we're probably not going to see anything like that again, just because guys don't stay that long or they transfer before they, you know, end up in that position where they're, you know, role players for 2 years and then starters. And, you know, that Stanley's role in that just makes it that much more special.
You know, not to take this, you know, completely off topic here, but when you look at the 07 team and how they went 17-14 and missed the NIT, but they were all young and you knew they would get better. I think the moment where you kind of knew that they were there or that they were about to be there was in that game in Boston against Gonzaga that they ended up losing that game.
I was at that game.
Oh, you were. Yeah. They lost 85-82. I have it up in front of me, but Gonzaga is one of the best teams in the country, and they looked so much more ready to handle a team like that than they did even 2 weeks before in the Garden against, albeit a much better Memphis team.
Yeah, and they got blown out by them.
Right, and from there, I think they really kind of turned it on, except for like one little blip in mid-January. I mean, that team ended up being really, really good the rest of the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, of course, that led into the Final Four the next year.
Stanley also had a double-double in that Indiana game after the Dyson Wiggins suspension.
That is one of my all-time favorite regular season games.
That was a great one.
Yeah.
What year was that?
'08. I wouldn't really talk about anything that happened in the postseason, but regular season.
I don't
season,
think there was one.
Fantastic.
In fact, I believe it was canceled.
No, they canceled it.
Yeah. It was COVID.
Yeah. That was COVID 08.
I would say that's probably that team's signature win, right?
Yeah.
Indiana, yeah.
Yeah,
I think so.
Because they beat some good teams in that 10-game run, some wins outside it. But
yeah, I think the only one that might kind of come close would be the next year against Missouri when Kemba broke out in the Elite Eight,
which we watched in the retrocast. You can
not as good a game as we remember. No.
We should have just watched the Chattanooga game.
Yeah, but it had it was a very important game for that team.
Should just watch the Marquette game.
Oh, that Marquette game ruled.
Hey, maybe we will.
I will rewatch that anytime. That's like the dunk compilation video. Well, that actually literally is.
Yeah, right.
Like 4 minutes of that video or from that game.
The other thing that I just wanted to, like, it's rare for a dude from Alabama to come up to college for Connecticut.
Yeah.
And to go through all of the sort of trials and tribulations that he went through, especially, you know, during the semester he had to take off, and not give up or not, like, get too homesick or go home, that would be completely understandable to just say, like, this isn't working. I want to be closer to my family. And I really, I'm not sure we really gave it enough credit at the time. And in hindsight, it obviously looks a lot more noteworthy. But the fact that he just never gave up, and there was some, I apologize, I forget who actually wrote the anecdote. Maybe it was in the Jacobs piece. I don't know, something where he drove up from Alabama to Storrs with the UConn flags hanging out the windows of his car the entire drive.
I love that.
I mean, obviously, you know, Twitter wasn't anything then what it is now, like it barely existed. Mm-hmm. But could you imagine a recruit doing that today and how that would light UConn Twitter on fire?
Yeah. Oh, God. It would melt down.
Like, I would melt down.
Hot balls would just be like, out of his damn mind.
There would be nude pictures of me on the internet.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Put on a home field shirt.
Don't threaten us with a good time.
Be wearing that and nothing else.
Fair enough. Like Yogi Bear. That doesn't make sense.
Go with it.
Okay. But yeah, it was like bringing it back to like my own memories of just my only personal interactions being at the Calhoun game and just being like, wow, he looks so happy to just be around everything UConn. Like, he looks so happy to be around all these other, like, noteworthy players and Coach Calhoun, and there were some other assistants, like, I don't remember who his assistants were, but I'm sure, like, Blaney was there, and I don't know, maybe Hobbs was there at the time. But then, like, hearing those stories about how, oh, like, he was always exceptionally proud to be from UConn, and then to see everyone from guys that came before him to guys that were recent, and even Coach Calhoun has stories about his current St. Joe's players, St. Joseph's players, like, loving Sticks, and just knowing that, you know, even if we didn't know it necessarily at the time, that he was always a huge part of the UConn family and was exceptionally proud to be a part of it. I don't know. It's a nice thing to remember, even as it's really heartbreaking to deal with his loss, I think.
Having a guy like that, who gave so much to the university and feels the same way about UConn that we all do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's such a unusual thing. Like, not a lot of guys seem to feel that way, which, you know, is fine.
And a lot of the guys who end up being, like, the fan favorites are the guys who very clearly feel that way.
Right.
Like, obviously Stanley, but, like, Shabazz, in addition to being an amazing player, like, mm-hmm. absolutely loved UConn and loved being at UConn. Ryan Boatwright was another one of those guys, too. And we love them for
CV,
it.
Yeah.
And CV. Yeah, CV's a great Dallas example. Absolutely. Yeah.
The thing that stuck out for me was Calhoun talked about, like, he said that Stanley was easy to love, that he was just this really lovable, easy to love kid who was just so sweet and gentle, and, like, you could never stay mad at him because, you know, he's wearing his Stewie slippers. Yeah, and he's going to hug you and just, you know. But I just thought that was very telling because, like, it's not, you know, Calhoun, I will say, like, is more probably effusively affectionate about his players than people would expect.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when he talked about how easy Stanley was to love, I thought that was a really beautiful way to talk about somebody.
What do you guys think is the most sort of appropriate way or way you would think or you would prefer for UConn to honor Sticks going forward, especially this season if we're fortunate enough to get one?
If there is a season, I think a patch on the uniform for the season. And at some point, maybe not this year, but at some point in the next couple of years, I think he should go on the wall.
I agree.
Yeah.
Put him on the wall.
And honestly, put that entire 09 team on the wall, too. Like, they put the 99 team on there. You should put the 09 team on there. That should come maybe after the other national championship teams, but, like, they belong there.
If you're ranked number one at any point in the season, you go up on the wall.
Oh.
God, every women's team ever.
that's got to be men's only.
We're going to need a new wall.
Remember how cluttered Gamble used to be when they would hang banners for every tournament appearance? That is what it will look like again.
Me just trying to put Maria Conlon on the wall.
Yeah.
All right. Well, our condolences again to the Robinson family and, you know, every UConn fan like us who grew up admiring Stanley both on and off the court who's feeling the loss. It's a very sad day, but we'll always be able to revisit some really, really fun highlight videos, and we'll always compare every recruit that can dunk to Stanley. Yeah. It feels weird to do like a J. Timothy's ad.
Yeah.
Are we still technically doing those ads?
I don't know. I think we're just doing them as charity now.
I think the character needs to stay.
I think we'll skip the in-character J. Timothy's ad this week, but we'll say J. Timothy's is open for business again, and you should absolutely go support J. Timothy's in Playville, Connecticut.
I would love to have all of their wings inside of me.
Yeah.
I was literally just talking about their wings yesterday in real life.
Yeah.
And their delicious sweet chili and honey barbecue dirt wings.
I had some French onion soup there once. I was banging too. This is a FYI. Mm. Any black-owned businesses you want to shout out?
Craig's Kitchen in Rockville, Connecticut. Mm. Get some soul food, baby. Some delicious fried chicken also. Chicken and waffles.
I live in Glastonbury. There's a coffee shop I like called Birkins. That's black owned. That's great. You should go there. All right. What else is in the news? The WNBA tipped off in the Wubble.
Yeah.
This Wubble. Weekend.
Dewey played her first game in a year.
By the way,
and so did
Sue and Diana.
And like 20 other UConn alum.
Jewel Lloyd actually had her first game back.
Yep,
no, UConn not alum, Jewel. Skylar Diggins. Skylar Diggins. Yeah. Well, you know, it was weird for me because like two seasons ago, I watched the most WNBA I've ever watched in my life. And then last year, I watched very little because none of my favorite players were playing. Well, I shouldn't say that. Gabby was playing, but most of my favorite players were not playing.
Yeah, I first off, I'm on record that Stewie's going to win the MVP. So I just want to state that on the pod as well. But Stewie's going to win the MVP.
That's a hot take.
I was going to say really going out on a limb there.
Is it?
No.
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 She hasn't played what was it, like 600 days or something since her last WNBA
game? With the national team in Connecticut when they came here. She played in that game.
That was her first game back from injury. Yeah.
I got to say, she looked sharp today, though. She did not look like somebody who had not played in a year. And actually, so did Sue.
I mean, like, granted, it's really good that the WNBA is, like, committed to branding Sabrina Ionescu. Like, go nuts.
Yeah.
Like, it's cool. They should market their stars. And, like, hopefully, you know, she is one. And for her college career, indicates she probably will be. But coming into that game, I was like, you know, Stewie's on the other roster, right? Like, the line was something like 14 and a half for Seattle, and I was like, I don't know.
Especially like after like Sue did that IG with Diana Taurasi, and they talked about how like they like to fuck up the rookies,
right.
And I was just like, you knew it, they were coming for it. You knew it. Yeah, it kind of like, I thought it was gonna be like a blowout, and then Liberty came back, and then
it was not a great
game. Put their foot in the gas. You can kind of tell they really haven't been able to like play for a while because everybody's been in quarantine. Yeah. And you could see like some of these people have been working out more in the off season than others.
It's also just super weird. And I imagine if it's weird watching, it's super weird to play. To just see them like in a completely like
empty.
And the like curtains that barricade the arena seem like they're like 5 feet off the court. Like it just feels like they're in a box.
Yeah, it's weird. And like the weird social distancing they're doing between people who are like sweating and breathing on each other in the game is like very bizarre. It's like you're all living in the same bubble and then you're playing basketball together and then we're going to like do these little like pods by the court. Like, what?
I will admit too, I saw like somebody made a free throw and then they like high five their teammates and I like flinched. I was like, oh, don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all in a bubble. It's fine.
It felt like it was a prison visit. Like, no touching.
Like Diana did look pretty good in her game, but that game did not go as well for them. It was like close, and then all of a sudden it was not close. They brought it back a little closer, but though there was one point Diana like gets in the lane and she just like she gets contact and she just kind of like heaves it up and of course it goes in and I was like, yep,
still doing
circus shit, Diana.
After humiliating someone on a crossover.
Yeah.
That was a much better game, I'll say. The LA Phoenix game was a little more entertaining, at least, than the Seattle New York game. The I have a weird dislike for the LA Sparks. Is it just Candace Parker?
It might be. I mean, that's like a strong element for me personally, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, plus the whole thing with when she was complaining about the Olympic team that year.
Because Stewie made it over her. And, like, obviously that was the right call. Yeah, here's the thing. I root for WNBA teams based on the number of UConn players on the team. So, conversely, I have to root against the teams that have the players that I do not like from Tennessee and or Notre Dame.
Well, and I don't think LA has ever had a UConn player. At least not that I can remember. It's going to be a great fact.
I'm sure at some point they have.
You think?
They must have.
I don't think so.
Like, I don't know. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
I do not think so.
I find it very unlikely that they haven't ever.
Fact check me, baby.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that because women's basketball statistics don't exist.
Yeah, it's trash.
Yeah. It's not great.
The
team I forget exists, period, is the Indiana Fever.
Every time.
There's only 12 teams in the league, and I get 11 of them.
Can never remember. Why? Who even thinks of Indiana?
Which feels like Asia Jones erasure. Didn't she play for Indiana? I apologize, Asia.
I don't know.
So what do you think? Who is any other WNBA hot takes?
Gabby and Steph are roommates with Allie Quigley and Courtney Vandersloot, and you know that is the funnest house. They are having the best time.
Yeah. Azaray's on that team now too, right?
Yeah, yeah. Azaray was traded for Katie Lou. That's so right. Lou is in Dallas and Z is now in Chicago.
I always forget about Azaray.
Bria is playing with DT, and actually we did not mention Morgan Tuck is also on Seattle.
Did she play? I didn't see her at all today.
I didn't see her in the game, but I might have missed it.
Me too.
No, she had a knee injury.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know.
She was, I think,
Kia died also in the Liberty game.
It looked way worse than it turned out to be. Like, yeah, the way she reacted looked like her leg exploded, but it turned out to be a sprained ankle. So,
I mean, sprained ankles are like hideously painful and can be somewhat debilitating. So, I don't know.
It looked bad.
She stepped on somebody and turned it, and it looked like it hurt a lot.
And then we should mention Tip Hayes, Renee Montgomery, Tina Charles are all sitting out, as is our personal hero, Maya Moore, again.
Yep.
So good luck to all them.
Currently crowdfunding the statue right now for Maya Moore.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll set up our own GoFundMe. Name something after her, you can. Do it.
Do it.
Do it.
Who you got? You got Seattle winning it?
Yeah.
I think I do too.
Yeah. I just hope that we don't end up, like 2 years ago, the semifinal was like one of the greatest playoff series. It was like with Sue versus DT. So the final ended up being like a little bit of a letdown for me.
I mean, this was like a whole other podcast, but the way the WNBA does the playoffs sucks.
It's so dumb. I hate it. I hate it with my life.
There's single elimination, like 8 teams, but some teams get byes, which is stupid.
And then half of them are playing in different arenas than they play their home games.
Yeah, they all are, because no one prioritizes the WNBA. Right. So
no one foresees a playoff experience, apparently.
Right.
Nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
It's fun. I think my other hot take is that Gabby's going to make the All-Star team.
Ooh, I like it.
Which I hot-taked Tip Hayes onto the All-Star team, I think, 2 years ago. So
cool. Yeah.
I'm feeling
good
about it.
You're very influential in the world.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Gabby, she was like MVP in her French. She won some award on her French league. Yeah. She's like
the Ballon d'Or.
She also holds at least a portion of the record for most Dimebag podcast guest appearances.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Which is very important.
It is.
I am actually interested to see what Katie Lou does this year.
Yeah.
Because from what I understand, she was not in a great situation in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And also was like kind of battling some injuries and stuff. And now that she is playing, I can't say she's in Dallas, but she's playing for Dallas.
Yep.
And with her sister, I think this is going to be a breakout year for her. I hope.
I think her sister got cut, though, didn't she?
Oh, she did?
I think so. She's playing with Mariah Jefferson, though. Okay.
Yeah, but that's, you know.
Great. Yeah. We love Mo.
Yeah.
Probably better than Carly.
Definitely better than Carly.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, I should say, Carly follows me on Twitter, so I was going to say
there's some sort of Russ, like... you know, formula for adjusting people based on how nice they are to Russ.
Yeah. No, Carly's very nice to me. I think I've interviewed Mariah, but I've never really, I don't know.
I think I interviewed Mariah their final year after the AAC tournament. She was very, very nice. Lou's very nice as well. They're all nice. True.
They're great.
Other than the one player who
almost
hates
all
Russ.
Of them are nice.
Are we allowed to say who it
There's
is?
There's only one player.
We didn't even mention Nafisa is playing Minnesota with Crystal. Crystal made
Nafisa
the team.
Nafisa also very nice.
Also very nice. Crystal's very nice. They're all very nice. Yeah. But I was very happy for Crystal. I think that's like the exact right fit for her. And she was she got picked up in the second round, but she was only their second pick. So it seems like they could use another point guard there. And I hope she has a great season. I hope Nafisa like fucking kills it this year.
Yeah, another all-star.
Yeah. For sure.
What else we got to discuss today? Do you want to discuss Andrew Hurley?
Yeah.
So Dan Hurley's son Andrew is walking on to the UConn men's team.
Our young recruit out of East Catholic High School in Manchester, Connecticut.
Probably the best coach's son to play for UConn since Jeff Calhoun.
Probably.
Yeah, probably.
Ironically, so like, go ahead, Megan.
I was just going to say, so I grew up around here, and like when I was in high school, East Catholic was sort of known for their absolutely trash-tastic sports, but their basketball team is actually really good. They made it to the state championships, I want to say.
They might have won.
And they might have. They may have won a stage. I can't remember.
They won.
But they had a very successful season, and young Hurley was a role player on that team.
I was going to say, ironically, Kenya Hunter's son, Jalen, is actually really, really good, but he's on Scott. I think he's going to Old Dominion. Does that sound right? But he was Andrew Hurley's teammate at East Catholic.
Yeah, at East Catholic, but yeah.
He's really good. Like, he was actually was kind of hoping he would go to UConn, but obviously scholarship versus walk-on is a whole different equation. But so he might be the best UConn coach's kid in 20 years, but he's not the best UConn coach's kid on his own high school team. So do with that what you will.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of like crazy conspiracy theories are we going to spew next year when Andrew Hurley is accidentally left in the game at the end to take the game-winning three against Villanova?
That is a moment I forgot about. Remember how much AAC refs just fucked us all season?
So hard.
I do. I remember.
So hard.
It's like they had a reason to not like us.
I've already forgotten.
What is the AAC? Sunshine, the entire AAC experience already.
That's right.
It was like,
we're never going to have to play Cincinnati again. I'm excited about that.
Thank God.
I don't know. What if we meet in the third round of the NCAA tournament?
You're so funny.
Well, I would say congratulations to UConn.
The third round being the after round. The play-in game and the first round.
Yes, that's right.
The round of 32.
Just remember how UConn beat Cincinnati in the NCAA tournament and then fucked up Kawhi in the Sweet 16?
I do remember that.
That
was great.
That was a great time.
We should do that again.
Yeah,
I would love to do that again. Kawhi, I don't know if Kawhi is going to play for San Diego State again, but I'd like to see it.
He's got eligibility left.
Yeah.
He can come back.
That's all I had on the agenda. Anything else worth talking about?
No.
You can't to get all the recruits, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And we'll have to talk about recruiting next time when Peter's here and can tell us about the players that we don't know about yet.
Yeah, we should say we're recording this on Saturday night, so Rasul Diggins is announcing his decision on Sunday, so we have no idea how that's going, although I think we're feeling pretty good about it.
Yeah,
Hotballs is.
Yeah, and Peter was too. And so is seemingly the entire staff of 247, I think. So feeling pretty good.
When he commits to Memphis tomorrow, we'll know.
But by the time people hear this, we'll know one way or the other.
I'll put down a marker. If Rasul Diggins has not picked UConn by the time this podcast comes out, I will tackle Russ off a building.
Yes.
Wow.
That's good. That's good.
Well, now I'm conflicted.
Wow. Okay. Harsh but fair, Meech.
I'm very confident in what other people are saying.
But there's like apparently like two other players that Peter thinks we might be getting very soon, and I don't really know.
And they're all good.
Yeah. He's very excited about the possibility of this being a very good class. I just don't know anything about them yet because he hasn't told us yet.
Well, it would be good. I mean, we missed on a few, so.
He was saying like potentially top 15 if all three of these dudes come through, so we'll find out.
Top 15 overall class. These are top. These are like top 50, top 60.
Yes, top.
Yeah, top 100 guys, basically.
15 overall class. Yeah. Yeah, and Diggins. Peter's real high in Diggins. He really likes him.
Yeah,
he's really good.
Peter's off to Shabazz.
It's okay. Yeah.
He did.
I think it's okay for us to acknowledge that, with the exception of maybe some like weird cases, UConn's not a school now that's going to be getting top 5, top 10 recruits. But they can get, you know, top 50, top 60 guys, and a lot of them, and develop them over a couple of years. And that's how they're going to be successful. And that's how a lot of these Big East schools have done it, you know, since realignment, especially Villanova. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I'd rather have a pretty good player for 3 years than, you know, an NBA top 5 pick for 1 year.
Right.
The other,
it's more fun. It's more fun to invest in those guys that you get to see play and mature and grow and all, you know, you have that like emotional relationship with them.
Yeah. The other thing that, Peter kind of was getting at. So a guy he mentions, Jordan Hawkins, is a top 50 wing who UConn had not really been heavily in on. And now Peter was mentioning him as a possible candidate. But like, that is the type of thing we could not do before. Like, we could not jump late into a top 50 guy's recruitment. Right. And we can now. Like, we essentially, not quite as much, but like, that's what we did with Snoga. Like,
yeah,
some things happened. Our need became more pressing. Hurley went in and got the guy. So,
especially too, when like other dominoes fall in other directions, and you know, certain schools pick guys that they, you know, suddenly there's a dude whose first choice isn't on the board anymore.
Yeah. And mind you, this is still with UConn not having played a game in the Big East yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, in theory, this will get even easier.
Yeah, although I will say, like, it is a weird new experience where every time a possible recruit comes up and you're like, all right, well, who are we up against? And you just see the same, like, four other Big East schools every time.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, shit, we got to win.
You know what, though? That's good, because either they pick us, which is great, or they don't, and we have someone to really hate twice a year.
You make a strong point, Russ.
That's it. Yeah, that is great. That's a great point.
Like, I couldn't really hate Hamidou Diallo when he went to Kentucky, because right. I just, you know, we didn't play against him.
Right.
Do what you want.
But you're going to hate Trey Patterson.
Yeah.
Imagine how much we would have ended up hating MAL if we'd been in the Big East at the time.
Well, he was bad, so.
Yeah, we might not have really hated him.
We still would have hated him, though. I mean, just probably. Like, on principle.
We would have hated him for like an off season and then realized he sucked.
Yeah. It was at the point where I was like hating guys that I knew UConn had been connected with, even though I couldn't remember the story of the actual recruitment. Like, I was really mad at like Nate Pierre-Louis for Temple. And then I was really mad about him one day. And then Peter was like, well, you know, they passed on him to get, I don't know, Jalen or someone. I forget.
Gilbert.
Actually, it was probably MAL.
Oh, geez, how did that work out?
Yeah. But it was funny. I was like harboring all this resentment for like a full season.
And Nate Pierre-Louis generally played well against us.
Yeah, he was good. He would have been a really good player on UConn, all things considered. UConn's next Mr. Big Shot, they're saying.
To talk about our team in the future tense and not just be like despondent about it. To be like, yeah, if you don't get these good guys, we'll like get some other good guys. Like,
yeah,
there are good guys to get and they want to come to play at our school. So it's not like desperation when we're like, we got to convince these kids to come and play against these motherfuckers in Tulsa and ECU, and like, you know, they don't want to come play against those teams, but now it's like, it's fine.
Yeah, no, ideally we get this group of guys and then we're great at the beginning of the 2021 season, or we don't and we're great the second semester.
Right, we get different good guys.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to miss a class. Like, that's really where we're at right now. So like, you can't just completely miss. Like, you can't have one top 75 guy coming in and then like some other low level sort of, you know, lottery ticket dudes, and then have your one top 75 guy be bad. Like, you lose a year and a half that way.
Right.
And things change that fast. Like, a year and a half from now, St. John's might be able to field a competitive.
Oh, come on. That's a little bit.
You don't let me tell what sport it would be competitive in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, their women's team could be pretty good.
Their baseball team is very solid.
All of the meat sports will be good.
Yeah.
Right. St. John's cricket team is really underrated.
So
I do hope we can get at least a conference season this year, because if nothing else, I'd love to kick the shit out of Georgetown a couple times.
Yeah. What would that look like? What would the conference season only look like? 20 games starting in January? Or would it be more games starting earlier?
I'm thinking it would be the 20 games starting in January, with the flexibility so that if they can, individual teams could schedule like one or two local non-conference games that they could agree on and make work. Like, I bet Providence could find a way to play URI. Mm-hmm. Maybe UConn could play UMass, something like that. When they make the conference schedule, when they say it runs, you know, you're two in December or whatever, and then January to March, they set it up so that there are a couple of gaps to add non-conference games in. So I think there is time to do that if, you know, you genuinely want to put together some sort of resume. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's like conference plus one or two, but it might just be 20 games, which honestly, against Big East competition, I could live with that.
Hey, everybody, thank you for listening to this episode of the Diamondback Podcast. I know you'll join us in holding the Robinson family in your thoughts. Until next time, we'll see you later.